Good morning. It's time for Lynn Cannell Voice, a public affairs talk show from the KHNS Local News. Today, we're talking about COVID-19 and your health with experts from around the Upper Lynn Cannell. I'm Claire Strimple, joined by my colleague Henry Leisha. Today, we're speaking to Elaine Hickey, the Haines Public Health Nurse, Joanna Huff, Dahl Memorial Clinic's Nurse Practitioner and Chief Medical Officer, Joe Rao, Skagway's Fire Chief, and Emily Rauscher, Emergency Services Administrator for the Municipality of Skagway.
All right. This question is for Public Health Nurse Elaine Hickey. What do you think are the advantages and disadvantages of living in a place like Haines or Skagway right now?
Okay. So, you know, I think some of the advantages are just, you know, location and geography and being a little bit more isolated to influx of people at this time. It keeps it, less chance of exposures from it being brought in from other communities and other states, things like that. I think add to a great advantage. I think the smaller size of the community camaraderie, you know, people watching out for each other and protecting each other and really supporting each other is a great advantage. Disadvantage, I think, you know, one thing I would consider is just maybe, you know, access to healthcare or being able to get out of town if someone does get more seriously ill and need to be transported, weather conditions, things like that, that play a part in being able to medevac or get someone out. So I think there's a lot more planning involved and a lot more details and things like that for supports in the communities for healthcare and being able to care for those people and any clients that would be in that position. I think that makes it a little bit more of a challenge in the smaller community.
So you mentioned transportation for out of town medical care or for medical care out of town. How are medevac services operating right now? Is that process any different than it was before the pandemic?
I think Joanna might be a better person to be able to answer that one more directly. We don't really have much direct, involvement with those decisions as they do in the local clinic levels.
Yes, sir. And we still medevac as we did before. We are a little bit limited because of our area, different, for instance, Airlift Northwest has a certain type of plane that can land here, and they are actually having to ship that plane to Washington. So we are going to be even more limited on our air evac system. We do have the ability to go up into Whitehorse and have another company meet us up there. Guardian does come over on occasion if the weather's right. And we also get the Coast Guard in at times if it's a perfect situation, which it isn't always a perfect situation. So we do have some struggles with medevacs. It can be trying at times, and we have kept patients here in the clinic for more than 24 hours, keeping them stable until we can get them out into the community. There are protocols on each company for potential COVID. We are asked questions through whatever facility we transfer to, as well as the transport crew. About potential infection and safeguards for us as well as for the transport crew and the facility that we transport them to. I don't know if that all made sense, but it did in my head.
Yeah, and as a follow-up, how do you decide when a patient who tests positive for COVID-19 needs to be transported to a facility that can offer a greater level of care?
That happens in the clinic. It happens with the provider that is dealing with the patient. And best case scenario, the patient has very mild symptoms and we're able to keep them at home, comfortable, isolated. However, there are cases, as we all know, that it turns quickly into a dangerous situation respiratory-wise. So if somebody is having any sort of respiratory symptoms that in a normal case would be like an increased cough or congestion, that for respiratory symptoms would be classified as mild, I would actually look at that a little bit closer on sending them somewhere else because of how fast COVID hits the respiratory system, and knowing that the ability to stabilize them would be in jeopardy at that point. So age, sickness, what their symptoms are, and then you would also have to get a provider to accept them at another facility and go from there.
So speaking of people moving between facilities, you know, often people do travel out of Haines and Skagway for medical procedures, or just traveling within Haines and Skagway. Some patients require medical escorts. So those are the friends and family members who help patients kind of navigate the medical system for surgery or other procedures. Will that system stay in place for the foreseeable future? How will that work?
Right now, that's been put on hold with our transport crews. They're not allowing anybody extra to come with them because that is a risk for everybody involved.
And then if a patient has a mild case and can stay at home or stay in the community, how does that work? How will their illness be monitored?
Thankfully, we have already set up a groundwork to deal with this. The clinic has worked really hard with the emergency response system, and I believe Joe is on that committee. And we do have isolation areas if the patient is unable to isolate at home safely, like there's other people in the household that are negative or whatever. So we do have areas where they can be isolated. The clinic would definitely keep in contact. And we already have it set up where there will be a provider and one of our backup people that checks on the patient on a daily, more than one time a day basis. We also have a list of people that it's called our quarantine list that have come into town and they're on the 14-day quarantine. We contact them regularly, make sure they're all okay, nobody's having symptoms. So we're keeping close contact with anybody who may potentially have any symptoms, as well as, checking to see for anybody who may show a positive later down the road.
Also, I can add public health's role basically is when a positive test result is obtained from the lab, they notify the Department of Epidemiology, and epidemiology sends those positive cases out to public health nurses. Once that is information is gotten by us, we then have to initiate the investigation on the case. So it's an index investigation, that's the person that's positive. And then we also do a contact investigation with that person. So meaning we look back during the positive person's infectious period, and we identify any close contacts. And when we talk about close contacts, that is anyone who has been within 6 feet of distance for 10 minutes or longer with that person that tested positive. And then, we make a list of all those names, and then we contact all of those people. Those people that are deemed as those close contacts are who we're looking at that, you know, we monitor for symptoms. If they're having symptoms, we help arrange, make sure that they get testing done. But we also monitor, then for 14 days for that period of time to make sure they do not develop symptoms or become suspicious of symptoms. We continue and they get daily phone calls every day from us for those 14 days. And then the positive persons, people that were positive, they get phone calls every day also and keep getting monitored until they're deemed clear and no longer in a contagious period. So we do that, and we often do it, you know, jointly with the clinics and their medical care providers, and, you know, follow up and have lots of conversations both ways, especially if we have concerns of progressing symptoms or worrisome signs and symptoms, or assistance with testing.
We had a question from a listener who said, you know, he's certified in CPR and first aid, but what should CPR look like in the age of COVID-19? So for people who do know how to administer CPR and first aid in the community, should they switch to hands only for CPR for strangers or people not in their household? How should they manage that?
Well, it definitely looks different. On the EMS side of things, we are going to be all masked up, and that's going to be for every single call. So just a general EMS call looks completely different. When we come in your home, half of our face is going to be covered up. We're going to have all the required PPE from the CDC. So that just looks different. When we're working a CPR or a code, we're going to have that same PPE requirements that the CDC says. Studies have shown, so we use high performance CPR at King County, and compressions are king with CPR. So if you're doing compressions and you're doing them efficiently, that is the primary that's the primary thing that you need to be doing. So it's compressions, then it's the AED, so that shock, you know, when you put the pads on and you deliver that shock, that's number two in the primary. So one, two, and then three would be the breathing. So breathing is the third most important thing in CPR. So if you're doing compressions, that's what they need to make sure that they're effective. You want to make sure that they're deep enough. You want to make sure that you're recoiling and providing that that circulation for the body, that you're pumping the heart.
Sorry.
It's a radio. So compressions are king. Don't worry about airway. Do those compressions. Make sure that they're effective, so they're deep enough and that you're coming up enough to allow that blood flow to return to the heart, and then push the blood back out to the body so that it can perfuse. If you have an AED, put the pads on and follow the prompts, and then just don't worry about, it's okay if you don't worry about airway.
Good to know. And then I guess to back up a step, is it, you know, what is it safe to call 911? What should people be thinking about? Is the bar kind of higher for an emergency call now? How do you manage that?
Just call 911. We have protocols in place, and they've been in place since mid-March, to where, you know, dispatch is going to ask you a few more questions just regarding, you know, our safety, just to give us a heads up on what type of PPE that we are going to need to put on. So they'll ask you questions on whether you're in quarantine or you've hung out with somebody that is in quarantine, whether you've had any fevers, just general information. If any of those are positive, then they'll page it out a different way and we'll go in with different PPE. But we'll also do a double check and ask those similar questions just for checks and balance to make sure that everybody's protected that's going into a home. But that's what it'll look like if you call 911. But if you were still here, call 911. Don't be afraid to call 911.
You're listening to Lynn Canal Voice, a public affairs talk show from the KHNS Local News. Today, we're talking about COVID-19 and your health with experts from around the Upper Lynn Canal. We just heard from Elaine Hickey, a public health nurse based out of Juneau, about tracing positive cases. And at the last town hall in Haines, you described some ways the public can help contract tracers do their job. Could you tell us what people can do to kind of assist in that work?
Great, yeah. So that is really key. You know, as things are starting to open back up and, you know, people are getting out and about more and businesses are opening, you know, those personal and mitigation strategies are key to helping keep this, to continue to keep it minimized and keep exposure risks down. So when we talk about that, you know, we're talking about really, you know, you'll hear Dr. Zing talking about, you know, that the personal bubble and keeping your bubble size small. So, you know, starting to expand interactions with other people, but doing it safely. So doing it maybe expanding to like another group of friends, but keeping that consistent. So, you know, you have, say, one other family that, you know, you're really close with. Well, now you can start interacting together, but keep it consistently with that family and slowly expand. And that way, you know, you're keeping your risk and exposure risks down as small as possible. Consistency is really important. You know, keep hand washing. That's key. All those hygiene measures we always talk about, the hand washing, frequent cleaning of high touch areas and zones, and sanitizing of those areas. Continuing with face masks. That's really important. It really does has worked and helped with reducing potential exposures. You know, that's really key to do. One of the other things we like to try and tell people, ask people to do is keep track of those close interactions you do have. So again, that 6 foot distance with people and, you know, for 10 minutes or longer, any of those types of interactions you're having, jot them down, make notes, because when we do those investigations, it really helps when someone has a more complete list and can figure out where they were and know where they're at. We often see people will pull out like bank statements and look at, you know, where they've had charges and things like that so that they can help remember. Because we also look back 14 days trying to figure out where a person who is positive, we also need to look back and see where they were potentially exposed. So it's a lot of time framing to try and remember what our activities were and what we were doing. So if people can kind of keep a log, jot down that information, it just makes it a lot handier and a lot easier on contact tracing and being able to track down and no one's missed or forgotten, or, you know, it just makes it a more complete investigation.
Great. And so to follow up on that, as the state reopens and restrictions are loosened on where people can go and how they can interact, we've got some questions about that kind of more social aspect that you're talking about. Among those, you know, we're looking at restaurants, gyms, bars opening. What are ways to interact in those places and still stay safe?
Yeah, I think one of the key things, you know, is, again, maintaining that 6 feet or greater distance from people that, you know, you don't know or you're not around, you know, not your household contacts, things like that. Keeping those contacts, wearing the masks when you can, you know, and again, just is it cleaning, you know, if you're like in the gym, making sure, you know, that equipment is cleaned down, wiped down and cleaned and before the next person is on, and just being diligent about paying attention to those type of situations when you are out in public, and avoiding that distance if you can.
And then a follow-up, and this is again for anyone who wants to answer. In, you know, in small towns, people are, I feel like, really, really plugged into their social circles, especially maybe. Can we see our friends yet? How do you do that safely? What if you're invited to a party or a gathering? What kinds of questions should you be asking yourself to make sure that you interact with the people you care about in a way that doesn't put you or them at risk?
Hey, Claire, this is Joe. You know, Elaine had hit on it earlier, and what I could just remind people is just be smart about it. Go out for your walks with your friends. I don't know if I would still feel comfortable going into somebody's house for a party gathering where you're in close contact. I know that I don't think there's anybody out there that enjoys getting the flu or a cold each winter. And this could be the same thing. I mean, if you social distance, you lessen the chance. I just think that just I don't know how you get across to people, just be smart about it. You know what's out there. We don't want to get it or give it to somebody.
Yeah, and so when you say be smart about it, you know, what should people be considering? Is like the age of people they are spending time with something people should think about before socializing?
Yeah, right off the bat, our biggest concern that we really looked at was the demographics of the elderly. Knowing from the initial reports when this was first showing up, they were having problems. You know, the majority of the folks that are hit hardest are the elderly population that have pre-existing conditions. And so we really wanted to protect our elderly. Well, guess what? They didn't want to be told what to do. They wanted to go out and meet with their coffee folks. So when the city mandated that the coffee houses kind of closed to socialization, we found them picking each other up in their cars and going for their little drive. We'll get around this. They got their coffee to go, but they hopped in the same stinking car and drove around. So we kind of had to share with them the importance of the distancing for their own benefit. If they're around younger folks that may not be so susceptible to the symptoms and not know that they have any communicable disease, infectious disease is a better word for it, that those folks may think that they're just fine, but then pass it on to the elderly. And we didn't want it to run through the elderly and be overwhelmed. So that was one of our biggest challenges that we faced early on. And so far, knocking on wood, we're doing pretty good at that.
Nice. Joanna, did you have something to add there?
I was going to agree with Joe. And also, one of the things that I've noticed just on the social media aspect of it is that a lot of people really hate the masks. And, you know, these masks aren't doing any good and they're not the right ones. But when it, you know, long and short of it, the mask really isn't so that you don't get it. The mask is to protect the person that's next to you so they don't get it from you. And that's the big thing that people really need to realize, you know, having the mask pinched around your nose and having it fitting properly is keeping anything that you might have, whether it's the flu, whether it's strep throat, whether it's COVID, in that mask so that, you know, you can stand next to Joe, you know, maybe 5 feet by accident and have a conversation with him because you took a step forward instead of staying the 6 feet away. And that's what people need to remember. We're not trying to, you know, force anything down anybody's throat. We're just trying to look after each person. And Joe's exactly right. I wouldn't want to know that I spread anything to anybody else. That would make me feel horrible. And I think most people feel that way. So yes, I agree with that. And then the hand washing, most people don't realize that you're touching things so often that 20 seconds of hand washing is nothing. And if you really look at it, you should be washing your hands at least every 15 minutes because you're touching so many different things. So if people pay attention to that, then they're all of a sudden realizing, okay, I've touched my phone, I've touched the counter, I've touched my face, I've touched my clothes, I've rearranged my hair. I probably should be washing my hands more. So little things can be changed if people pay attention to it.
That's huge. Every 15 minutes is a raised my eyebrows for sure. Tell me a little bit more about that, because we touch things all the time. As you were saying that, I went through the number of things I'd touched and got a little horrified, and I've just been in my own home here. So what are good ways to disinfect surfaces that you commonly touch, and how often?
Well, that's a good question. COVID actually lasts on metallic surfaces longer than it does on porous surfaces. Now, what I have read, and Elaine, you can correct me if I'm wrong. On a non-porous, it lasts about 3 days. Is that correct?
Yes, that's the last I saw out too.
Yeah, so if you're, for instance, if you're getting mail in and you put it in your garage for 3 days, that is supposed to take care of the time frame that that mail could have been infected in transit. However, metal objects, COVID can last up to 9 days, I believe it was. And then it can last in the air a lot longer. If you were, for instance, in a secluded room with somebody. So there's, you have to think about those little things that we do every day that we don't realize that we could potentially be infecting everything that we touch. I mean, I know that here in my office alone, just in this interview, I have picked up my pen, I've touched my mouse, I've touched my keyboard, I've touched my laptop, I've rearranged my hair, and I drank my soda, not to mention pulling my shirt down and rearranging my stethoscope. And so, yes, there's a lot of things we're touching.
So do you recommend wiping things down with soap and water, or a lot of people have made a run on Clorox towels?
What do you? Bleach compound, and the CDC has the exact mixture of it. And you actually have to change it every 24 hours. It only lasts for 24 hours. Do you know the dilution, Elaine, right off the
top? Yeah. For bleach, you can use 4 teaspoons per quart of water, or 1/3 cup per gallon for a bleach mixture. And again, it would remix it every 24 hours. You would discard it and start over every 24 hours.
And you just wipe everything down with that multiple times a day.
Yeah. Yep. And it's good to, on certain circumstances, you know, you can spray it on, let it sit for at least a minute to sanitize before you wipe it down.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And most over-the-household cleaners, anything of cleaning products are effective. The CDC also does have on their website, there's a list that you can access of all approved cleaning agents that will kill the COVID virus.
Okay. I just wanted to talk about the airborne and how to ventilate. So that's really important too. So the weather's been so nice, open your windows, get fresh air in. I know if we do a transport and there's suspect COVID, our protocol is we're airing out the ambulance for 10 minutes. We're using the bleach solution. We're letting it sit a little bit longer, well, a lot longer, but it's so important to air out and to ventilate. And that kind of goes back to how you can hang out with your friends. You can do the social distancing. You can do the masks. You can keep your hands clean, but you can also hang out outside. That's probably the best thing you can do because you're ventilating your space. Restaurant people, open your doors, ventilate the air. So it's not getting on our clothes since it is airborne. It's not getting in our hair. Because that's all places that it can live, you know. If you're super sensitive about or just scared, that's fine. If you go out, come back home, take a shower, wash your clothes. You know, you can do all these different things. But that airborne part is really important to address. And I would just say, get outside, ventilate. And just get that fresh air and the clean air. And that goes for pretty much all sicknesses. But we're in the spring. We've had beautiful weather. Just let some fresh air in your house. Yeah.
And to follow up on that, as it is the spring and when people are getting outside, there have been different public health announcements about wearing masks while running and biking and exercising. Is that necessary?
What they're saying now is is you don't have to wear a mask if you're 20 feet apart from somebody. while you're exercising. However, I mean, that seems sort of off. If you're going to be doing something like that with somebody else, you're going to be closer than that. So, you know, again, think about what you're doing, practice safety. Obviously, if you can't breathe in a mask while you're exercising, then, you know, maybe you want to keep that 20 feet distance. But safety is always the biggest concern on the person next to you, the person that you have to go home to later, and keeping everybody safe in that regard.
All right, thanks. So a couple more kind of technical questions. We've had a listener who's curious, is there anybody who's required to get tested, who must get tested at this time?
No, there's really not. That's a tough question to answer. You know, there's a lot of recommendations. You know, there's certain businesses that, you know, have in their mitigation plans and their operation plans that require their staff to be tested. But, you know, it's not, again, it comes down to personal choice and then what that business's consequences. You know, there's not, that I'm aware of, anything per se, like as a state mandate stating that, you know, this person absolutely has to go and be tested. You know, it's still a person's choice whether they wish to have that testing done or not. You know, it can be highly encouraged and you know, try to persuade someone to do that if we feel that they really need to be, but it's still someone's right to decide whether, you know, they feel they want to pursue that testing or not. Like I said, I think that's as far as I know where that stands right now.
Yeah. Emily Rauscher with Skagway EMS, it looks like you had something to add.
I was just gonna agree with Elaine. So here at Skagway Fire, we do have protocols in place that if you do have a confirmed exposure and you're either symptomatic or asymptomatic, there's different flow charts that you would follow. But if you are symptomatic, then there is testing that is encouraged, especially when we're returning back to work. So if you're not symptomatic, we are doing an isolation period once you start showing those signs and there is testing. But it all depends on a confirmed exposure, and that would be the patient source. So the clinic identifying that the patient does have COVID-19.
And then, you know, for people who want to get a test, are there certain priorities or requirements for who gets tested and who doesn't?
So we do follow the CDC guidelines on symptomatic and asymptomatic testing. They just recently opened up asymptomatic testing. We were lucky enough in Skagway to get what's called the Abbott ID test, which is a rapid test. We do have that equipment available in Skagway. So what happens is a person can call the clinic and say, look, you know, I'm not feeling well, or I have a sore throat, or I have a fever, whatever their symptom may be, and they are asked questions by the front. So they're given a brief interview, and then they are sent to a provider. The provider goes through an interview process as well, and we still have to follow the state guidelines for testing. And that would be fever, cough, rigors, sore throat. Let me see if I'm trying to remember them all. Shortness of breath, chills, loss of taste, loss of smell, those types of symptoms. We're still obviously triggering on people who've been out of the country in high risk areas or gone through international airports, that type of stuff. But long and short of it is, once they talk to a provider and have matched up symptoms and we have matched up relatively good enough concern, we do test. We can test with the rapid, we can test through state means as well. So we can send it out to state to have the genetic testing as well.
Great. And to dive into that a little more, say I've just gotten tested. Oh, and just a note, those rapid tests are available in Haines as well. Is that correct, Elaine?
Yes, they are.
Just making sure. Yeah. So Haines and Skagway both have those two types of tests. But say I've just gotten a negative test result back. So I'm COVID free. Can I just go back to work and quit my quarantine, or do I need to finish out my 14 days?
We suggest that you finish out the quarantine time because all of our tests are still sent off to the state to be confirmed. When it's a rapid test, they only need to have, it's a higher risk for a false negative. So we still send out our negative tests to the state and they confirm those. And it takes about 4 to 5 days to get an absolute confirmation.
Yes, and that's if you are a known contact and you are listed as a known close contact and you go and get tested, even if that test comes back negative, we still require the 14-day quarantine because, you know, symptoms can start up to 14 days after the date of your last exposure. So that's the other thing I did not clarify. You know, those designated close contacts, it's the 14-day quarantine from the date of last exposure to that person with a positive test. So, you know, if your exposure by the time you get listed as a contact was actually 7 days ago, was the last time you were in contact with that person that tested positive, you're already 17 days considered into your quarantine time. So you would have 7 more days of then like being quarantined home and being monitored by public health as long as you stay symptom free. But a negative test does not get you like out of that 14-day monitoring time frame. You have to continue to do that.
You're listening to Lynn Cannell Voice, a public affairs talk show from the KHNS Local News. Today, we're talking about COVID-19 and your health with experts from around the Upper Lynn Canal. Today, we're joined by Elaine Hickey, the Haines Public Health Nurse, Joanna Huff, Dahl Memorial Clinic's Nurse Practitioner and Chief Medical Officer, Joe Rao, Skagway's Fire Chief, and Emily Rauscher, Emergency Services Administrator for the Municipality of Skagway.
To dive right back into kind of day-to-day things, there are things that I feel like we do on a daily basis that we've changed the way that we've thought about them, and things like going and getting the mail. How risky is your mail? Should you disinfect it? Should you wear gloves when you check your mail? And also going out to eat. Is there any risk that food you eat could give you the virus?
There has been a lot of talk about the mail being quote unquote infected, and you know that's going through a lot of places, so it you know would be infected, and that's where people are getting it. If you're that worried about it, put it in a area such as your garage, closed area for 3 days. That's when it would be safe after that to obtain. The other thing that I have recommended for older people is that, you know, if they're one of the things that we noticed with the elderly was they always wanted to give food to other people. They wanted to make food for their friends. So instead of putting it on a paper plate with plastic wrap, I recommended they put it in plastic so the plastic could be disinfected because cooked food potentially does not have COVID in it, from my understanding. So those are just some of the simple things that you can do. Is that what you're understanding too, Elaine?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, and it also, a lot of it tends to come down to personal choice. But also, you know, like say handling mail, doing things like that, you go back to key of hand washing again also. You know, if you're really diligent about that hand washing, so, you know, you bring your mail in from outside, you open it, you hand wash, you know, be thoughtful and thinking about, you know, okay, now don't touch my face, don't touch, you know, my eyes, my mouth. That's the way the virus is going to enter into your body. So if you're handling something when you're done, like wash your hands immediately. It's one way to really protect yourself because that virus has to enter your body. So, you know, it's going to have to get in through your mouth, through your eyes, through your nose to be able to infect you. So, you know, it's not going to absorb through your skin or things like that. So if you're hand washing and doing diligent hygiene around your potential exposures, that can go a long way in really protecting yourself. And, you know, your question about like eating in restaurants and things like that, again, I through food, you're not going to ingest the virus through eating food. You know, it's more of that, you know, sharing utensils or things like that. So again, that hygiene issues and just like not doing that. So you'll see restaurants with disposable silverware or things like that that are one-time use and are discarded. And so it's just being diligent about your surroundings and, you know, what you feel responsible for.
Yep. Another important thing, we had already talked about it earlier today in being smart. So if you're sick, then stay home. It doesn't necessarily mean you have the COVID, but if you're sick with anything, if you're not feeling well and you're just doing that self-check before you go out, if you're sick, just stay home. That's probably the best thing that you can do. Don't make people food. If you're not feeling well, don't share anything, just stay home. And that's the best thing, I think.
Yeah. And so far, you know, there've been few cases in Alaska compared to other areas of the U.S., you know, no positive cases in Haines or Skagway. What would you say to people who are skeptical about the necessity of health precautions right now?
We might be at low risk, but comparatively, however, we're at high risk because of all the influx of people that we get from everywhere. And not only that, but our community as a whole travels everywhere. You know, we're a very nomadic area, whether it's in the summer or, you know, the regulars in the winter, we all, you know, sort of disperse. And so I think that we're higher risk in some ways than other places, personally.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, it is a challenge because people do tend to start becoming complacent a little bit, thinking about, you know, even places where there are positive cases. You know, but the numbers are low. It's not necessarily community spread. So they're feeling pretty safe and start to get kind of complacent with following the guidelines. But, you know, I think it's one of the reasons why the numbers are low in communities that, you know, then also haven't had cases. You need to continue to just be diligent about those, you know, again, the hand washing, the hygiene, staying your social distancing, wearing the masks, because, you know, I mean, they've worked, you know, there are no cases some places and other places are really low. So it seems to, you know, those measures have helped and they are working. So to continue that, or else, you know, and not get complacent about it.
And people, yeah, so people have different opinions about this. Some people are wearing masks and others are not. You know, some are taking the pandemic very seriously, others not so much. And there may be disagreements between friends right now about, you know, the precautions that should be taken. How do you think people should approach these disagreements and talk about them?
I think we just have to be respectful of each other's choice and each other's health. We do have a lot of people in the community that are immunocompromised, and so we do have to look after those people. So it's not just about us as individuals, it's about the community as a whole. And so I know for Skagway, and I can't speak for Haines, but for Skagway, the community as a whole has always looked out for each other. That's my personal experience. And I think that if we continue to think in that direction, think about those around us, our neighbors, our friends, the Joes down the street, that we can keep an open mind frame and work together to protect each other. Again, we have to think about, you know, it's not about stamping on somebody else's toes or pushing, you know, somebody else's, our thoughts or our views into somebody else. It's about protecting each other and continuing to think about the community as a whole is one of the best ways of doing that.
I would just, you know, piggyback onto what Johanna was saying. You know, some people think that, you know, they should wear a mask, others don't. If you've got, it's really not hard to wear a buff, you know. If somebody that you're around is sensitive, me personally, I'll just pop it up. It's not a big deal. If there's people that I'm around and they aren't, you know, they don't want me to wear a mask, then I would maybe pop it down. It's just, it's flexible. Everybody has a choice. There's not mandates, I don't think. You know, maybe like certain agencies will have mandates and you need to follow those, but you still have a choice. The biggest thing is that whatever somebody wants to do, just don't attack them for it. I feel like if everybody can stay in their own lane and be respectful, like Johanna was saying, if you do notice they're uncomfortable, there's a lot of body language, right? They'll start walking really far away, then just pop up your buff. If you're with people and it's not a big, you know, it's not, they're okay with you not wearing a mask, then just pop it down and talk. It's a very flexible thing. It should not be as big of a deal as it is, I don't think.
And from, you know, from what I understand, it's not like Skagway EMS and the fire department are going around and enforcing social distancing or mask wearing.
Just for here at the fire department? Is that what you're asking?
Just around the community. Or is there enforcement of the health precautions in Skagway?
I don't know.
It can be. It's there to implement, but we're not implementing it. It's just getting everybody's mindset into, it's not about you, it's about keeping others safe. But yeah. I believe the governor wants to give us the ability to enforce things, but we're not enforcing it like that. Maybe just more of an educational conversation if we do run across it.
Like on the, you know, when we're going on a call, and we'll have our masks on, we'll mask the patient. So there's certain things that we do that way. But if we're out in the public and people aren't sick, then, you know, I'm not forcing them to put a mask on to be around me. I'll just, you know, take your own precautions, be smart. And just hopefully people aren't going out and about if they're sick. That's the biggest thing. And then doing everything Elaine said with the social distancing, washing your hands. It's pretty, just keep it simple, keep everything simple and just do those sort of things and you should be fine.
Yeah. We're out there trying to set the example of the intent of the rules and mandates. But the more I talk to some of the neighbors, I guess the whole community would be the neighbor, finding that there's more and more people that have a compromised immune system. Mm-hmm. And I was really surprised. And so I have no no problem with masking up. Mm-hmm. Out in public. You know, it's to keep everybody else safe.
Thanks for that, you guys. And so there's an idea that's been popping around on social media and on some news sources about the idea of herd immunity and using that as a solution towards reopening. Elaine, Johanna, what are your thoughts on the idea of herd immunity? Does that have legs?
That's a really tough question. You know, I'm the last thing I ball. You know, I'd say, I guess what I'm saying is that there's still so much unknown about this virus right now, that what those numbers would look like, how many, you know, people that would have to be infected to be able to make that, I don't want to say efficient, that's not the right word. I think there's just so much still unknown, and that they don't know, and that regarding the numbers and what that would take to make that be per se effective, or
according to Dr. Zink, who is with the epidemiology, when she does her twice a week meetings, approximately, these are her numbers, not mine, 500,000 Alaskans would have to have contracted the virus first. Now, given that the death rate of that is 1.3%, that would mean that 6,500 Alaskans would have to die for us to get the herd immunity into place. So we're talking, that's still a huge price, personally, to me. That's Skagway. I'm not willing to risk Skagway. That's also other communities, you know, the full community. I'm not willing to risk that. Herd immunity works best when there is an actual vaccine. We are months away from getting an actual vaccine. Herd immunity was actually the concept of that came about with so many people having a specific vaccine that those that could not get the vaccine were protected because all of those around it had the vaccine. So those people weren't getting sick. And so they protected the ones that could not have it. We don't have that ability right now.
Sounds like maybe not the most practicable solution for small communities.
If you have questions, feel free to call the clinic. We are happy to answer any questions. We have separated our operating hours so that immunocompromised come in the morning and anybody who's ill comes in the afternoon, and we do wear masks at the clinic. But we are happy to take any questions and answer any concerns. And if you're having symptoms, feel free to call. Wash your hands, wear your masks.
All right. Well, thank you. Huge thank you to all of you for taking time out of your much busier schedules lately, I imagine. So Elaine Hickey, Joanna Huff, Joe Rao, and Emily Rauscher, our local public health professionals and first responders. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Lynn Cannell Voice, a public affairs talk show from the KHNS Local News. Today, we talked about COVID-19 and your health with experts from around the Upper Lynn Canal. Elaine Hickey, the Haines Public Health Nurse, Joanna Huff, Dahl Memorial Clinic's Nurse Practitioner and Chief Medical Officer, Joe Rao, Skagway's Fire Chief, and Emily Rauscher, Emergency Services Administrator for the Municipality of Skagway. To listen again or to access previous episodes of Lynn Cannell Voice, visit our website at khns.org. Thanks for joining us.